been.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Pretty day out there. Every Tuesday at 4 p.m., we do the Think Tank. We get a couple of our friends together, usually on opposite sides of the aisle. Today, we have Michael Butler, recorder of deeds in the city, and St. Charles County executive Steve Ellman. Short timer. See, every time you come in, you're happier. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but...
Well, I still like to get a few things done before I go.
And Mike Elam's always following you around, making sure you're okay. Making sure you don't need the soda or anything.
Yeah, no, Mike's he's working hard.
He's working hard.
Yeah.
I love me some Mike Elam. I don't agree with a single thing he says, but I still like him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's... That's the kind of politician used to be very successful.
Yeah, that's so true.
The kind that you can disagree with but still like.
Kit Bond.
Kit Bond was exactly who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
I wonder if you bring him up.
We had John Hancock on earlier in the show.
Kit was amazing. If I can tell a little story about
anything
Kit. When I went to Jeff City in 1989, I got to know a lot of these labor Democrats from North County, okay? And found out real quick that they hated John Ashcroft. Okay, I understood. They were Democrats. He's a Republican. They hated him. But I found out they loved Kit Bond. They loved Kit Bond. He's a Republican. And they loved him. I finally asked somebody, why is that? And they said, when Kit was in the governor's office, Ashcroft was a teetotaler. But when Kit was in the governor's office, he'd invite all those guys over to the mansion after session was over, and they'd sit there and drink beer at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Nice.
And that's why, even though they disagreed on things, they could work with each other because they liked each other.
Was that the way when both of you were in the legislature? Yeah. You would argue and then you'd go get beers.
Yeah.
A lot of that's changed. Yeah, a lot has changed and everywhere. Yeah. So I hope we can bring it back. Well, that's what this think tank is for, ain't that right?
That's right.
We're solving that problem all here today. We're
starting it all again. Yeah, Joe Volmer was talking about how everyone would come back to his office on the Aldermanic board, and they would just sit there and drink and do a postmortem or whatever they just argued about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go to Club OL, Steve?
Pardon me?
Did you ever go to Club OL?
Club OL Schulten?
Yeah.
I went to Club OL. OL used to have a Budweiser truck deliver once a week, I think.
That's what we heard.
They'd pull in the basement of the Capitol, and they'd put it on a dolly and bring two or three cases up to his office.
There you go.
That's
awesome. OL was, he believed that was kind of the lubricant, in the legislative process when people were getting kind of edgy. And
what have we lost?
Getting along.
Why did we stop doing that together? Is it because you can't be seen with the other side?
I don't know.
I think there are two things. One, not to be against a gift ban. We were talking about gifts, and there was a gift ban that was passed in the legislature right after I left. And folks are that don't make a whole lot of money, and so a lot of legislators only have that's their only job, and they make less than 50 grand a year, and they have to live in two different places, and they have to pay for their own dinners in two different places, and pay rent in two different places. And there was a time where some of the people who influence them could bring everyone together and pay for your lunch or pay for your now they can't pay for more than coffee. So that did have an effect, a chilling effect, to where folks can't get to those beer trucks ain't coming no more.
Yeah,
those beer trucks
have,
can't come anymore.
They don't get together as much.
Yeah.
So they don't have that social interaction, and they don't get to know each other, and they don't get to know each other's family, and they don't get to know what they really care about.
Correct.
In addition to politics.
Mm-hmm.
So which is the greater evil, someone buying 10 different legislators lunch or losing the relationships?
I think the first year I was there, we did the ethics reform, and that's when we start requiring all the reporting.
Mm-hmm.
My position is, let them do what they want as long as they report it. If you think if you think I can be bought by a steak dinner and a couple beers, well, then you shouldn't vote for me.
Yeah, there was a saying in Jefferson City when I first got there, and I got there in 2013, was run in 2012, won in 2012, got there in 2013, was if you can buy me with a chicken dinner, then you don't, if someone can buy you with a chicken dinner, then you don't belong here.
Yeah.
So, and I think that created a culture, but some people did break the culture from time to time.
The old timers, when I got there in 1989, said if you can't eat their food, drink their booze and vote against them the next day.
Yep.
You have no business being up
here. That's absolutely right. That's what we were told.
Well, so. And the other thing I used to say, and you could probably agree with this, Michael, best thing going to Jeff City as a newbie, have plenty of friends before you go up there.
Yeah.
Because you'll get up there. And if you don't have any friends, there's all kinds of lobbyists who would love to be your friend. But you got to realize it's rent-a-friend, right?
Yeah, you're right.
It's rent-a-friend.
Right.
So, I mean, I had some good relationships with some lobbyists. I had some not-so-good relationships with others. But I always realized that they were just part of the system up there. And they, you know, I realized when I was gone, they were going to be treating someone else the same way. So before you go to Jeff City, make sure you have plenty of friends.
That's right. That's right. And we both started out in the minority, too, so we didn't have too many friends at first anyway.
That's right. That's right.
How often would you learn valuable information that would affect your voting from lobbyists? Pretty often?
Yeah. I didn't always rely on what they told me. I asked the other side, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lobbyists on both sides of every issue up there.
Yeah.
You don't have time to do the in-depth research on every single topic. Sometimes you need to rely upon a lobbyist, and there's some you can rely on and some you can't.
Yeah, and it's important to know we vote on like 40 to 50 things a day sometimes. So we couldn't read up on every single
bill.
So you do rely on people in the building, lobbyists or legislators or advocates. Sometimes they're advocates ain't buying you nothing. They just have good information.
I was in the House too, you know, and you had 164 people over there. So if you didn't know something, the chances are the guy sitting next to you or the gal sitting next to you did. You could kind of. But when it gets to the Senate, there's only 34 people,
right?
And you can't really rely upon anybody else. So you gotta either work and do the research yourself, or you gotta learn on which people you can rely on for proper information.
Right.
So I'm fascinated. As is every normie out there who's never been in this situation, how it works. I mean, I picture you walking through the hallways and a lobbyist just being like, Steve, I'm Dave with Wagons for Legless Dogs. I mean, like, is that how it works? Can I get 5 minutes of your time? That kind of thing?
No, there's all kinds of opportunities for them to get to know you. And generally, the good lobbyists don't wait until they need something from you. They get to know you. They have a relationship with you. They get you hopefully to trust them, what they say, to some extent or another. And then they just make it a point to make sure you know what their position is.
Yeah.
And, if you have questions, they're there to answer them for you. And
Wheels, I know this is one of your passions. How does all this hit you with...
I don't mind it. I think what Steve said is what it should be across the board. Like if you're able to say, this is who I met with, this is what we did, this is what I, you know, this is where we ate, they paid for it, like fine. Because at least the voters then know what to do. They can say, yes, we like you, no, we don't. But you have to do the back and forth. You have to get to know people. And it's part of the reason, I'm guessing it's probably similar in Jeff City as it is in D.C., right?
Yeah,
where
I think so.
If you're on the other team, you're not allowed to be friends anymore because your voters don't like you to be friends with the quote-unquote enemy. And that's the crap that is just good.
So take my rule. Take the rule that I was told. Does that mean if you can't take a $400 million airplane from another country and vote against them the next day, you shouldn't be in office?
Yeah, I would say that's a good rule. That's a good rule. Also, maybe don't take stuff that's a gift to your government for your own personal use. That might be a good rule, too.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think $400 million is much different than a lunch, though.
Airplane.
A little bit.
I don't think we worry. Like, I'm sure when he's in Qatar, they feed him, right? Like, I don't think we're worried about that.
Yeah.
I don't think we're worried about what food he's eating or what champagne he's drinking or any of them, right? Any of our envoys that go to other countries. I'm sure that they're wined and dined and they get to do all that. Who cares? Nobody cares. A little bit different when you're talking about.
So is it and Rachel, I want to bring you in on this since you're so passionate about it. Is it a dollar issue? Is it a what the object is issue? Is it a Trump issue? What pokes you the most?
It's not a Trump issue for me. The only reason it's a Trump issue is it's just another example of him pushing things to the limit. It's a dollar amount issue, and it's something they could have recording devices, some sort of surveillance there. So then you have to strip the plane and inspect it and all this. It just seems like more trouble than it's worth. I don't understand. To me, it's an easy no. And I just don't understand why it's on the table, period.
But you do.
I mean, I do because
Because he wants it.
We're at the yes, yes.
Has anybody asked the Secret Service what they think of it?
Yeah, boy.
Very good question, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah, or the Air Force. They're the ones that have to retrofit it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You have to tear it all down to the studs and put in all the stuff you need to be in there and check for surveillance like Rachel's talking about. But I think I don't even know if it's a dollar figure as much as it is the symbolic nature of what's being given. Right? There's a difference between being in a place and everybody's got to eat and we're going to eat and we're going to show you the good stuff versus here's a personal trophy for you to take home, whether it's a super fancy pen or a $5,000 watch or whatever it is. I think it's more of what the symbol of it is, not necessarily getting the red carpet treatment because you're all dignitaries. And I'm sure we do that for other people when they come in, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So I think there's a difference between how you're treated and what you're given to take home.
I saw a political cartoon recently on this that showed a half Air Force One, half a Trojan horse. And it made me think about it.
Interesting.
A little interestingly.
Because let's say they fly the plane over here and we get the very best people and they take it down to the nuts and the bolts and they put it back together. You're still never 100% comfortable, right?
Correct.
I mean, there are rules about certain things, about how many, like as an example, I think I saw this because I wouldn't have cared before this story came out, but I believe any government computer has to be entirely manufactured in the United States.
Would make sense.
Literally every piece of it, and it has to be put together here.
What do you think? I did this little diatribe rant earlier where I said that MAGA, which to me is the new Republican Party, that MAGA is sort of like the strong man that stands up and points to the people who are talking about the rules and goes like, pearl clutching wussies, like we got real stuff to take care of, and we've got all these illegal immigrants, and I know they should have due process, but we can't do millions of trials, so we're just this one time going to send them in planes to El Salvador. Do you feel what I mean, Steve? Like there's a sentiment that if you're all about rules, then you're kind of a sissy, and you're not really here for what we need to get done.
That's why we got three branches of government. And eventually it's going to come down to what the judges say you can and can't do.
Mm-hmm. And whether they follow it or not.
By the way, my wife just sent me a text and said we have 163 reps instead of 164.
So married,
I apologize.
How dare you?
You got a good one.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. We're here with Michael Butler and Steve Ellman doing the think tank. And Steve, we kind of buried the lead when you walked in. You said you made a big statement that this is the most hopeful and optimistic you've been about the city and the state in a long time.
Yeah, I supported Mike Keogh for governor, and I like what he's done so far. And I'm very optimistic that. Especially having come from St. Louis, he understands some of our issues. And yeah, with Kara Spencer, I haven't had a lot of experience with her, but the times I have been around her, we were able to at least talk about issues and agree on at least a few things. And I've told her, we've talked on the phone, and I've pledged to her I'll do everything I can to help her get some things straightened out.
So I'm not asking you to crap on the former mayor. I've done that enough. But what was it that was difficult for the two of you to work together to the extent that it was?
The biggest problem is when she was elected was right during COVID. And I was the chair at East West Gateway. For the first 18 months, every time we saw each other was on a Zoom call. Mm. So for 18 months, I made no progress in terms of getting to know her.
Relationships.
Okay. At least I know Kara a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it just seemed, there were some issues we could agree on, some issues we did work together on, but the whole thing with the police, which I just thought should be the number one issue, was not the number one issue for her. And, so we had some disagreements, but it was never personal. And I don't know that she ever criticized me personally. And mm-hmm. I certainly didn't criticize her personally, personally, but, it was difficult to deal with her.
Michael, do you feel any change yet in the city?
Yeah, we see some new faces around in City Hall, but no, nothing different. I feel like there's, a lot of folks are not happy with the governor right now in St. Louis City with voting to take and signing into law to take over our police department. So there are there's a small group of folks who wanted that, but a large group of folks who feel that, you know, feel a little oppression from state government for takeover. And that's probably the biggest conversation, is preparing for what that's going to look like, because it's not the same as last time. It'll be a little more stringent and favorable to the state government this time.
Michael, I don't know if you saw it, but you know, Jeff County and Franklin County executives and myself, we did an op-ed about the whole government takeover. And our point was, hey, we're local officials. We're for local control.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want the state to have to take over the police department, but we want the city to fix it itself.
I agree.
Okay? But they had 3 years to fix it. And personally, I wish they had.
Yeah.
I mean, I went up at the request of Mayor Slay. I actually testified in favor of local control. Mm-hmm. 5 or 6 years ago, the last time, you know, before they took it to the vote of the people. So, yeah, local control is better. But they had, like I said, 3 years to start hiring more people, and just it didn't happen. So eventually the legislature did something.
Well, I think 3 years is not a long time. We would agree with that. And it's harder to hire folks when St. Charles is paying people $10,000 more than the city police officers. I think what I thought the solution was to help St. Louis City get some state funds to boost our starting pay to be not to, like, maybe on the same level as St. Charles, so we're not poaching folks from other places, but we can at least attract the police officers, that because a lot of our folks were training here then moving to St. Louis County or St. Charles or places, Illinois, we're paying $10,000-$20,000 more. And
I think that's the solution. What about the ARPA money? What about the NFL money? Why not use that to pay the police officers what you have to compete against the rest of the jurisdictions?
I think we both agree that ARPA and RAND's money were one-time expenditures, and increasing salaries is an annual expenditure. We both were part of state budgets that we never want to spend one-time money for long-term solutions. And there wasn't enough money to fund a long-term, large pay increase for employees. Now there was increases. Mayor Jones did increase salaries for police officers twice in those 3 years, but it wasn't large enough to compete, especially with St. Charles County. And I think that's a solution that still needs to get solved, no matter who has control of the police department.
All right. This is a good one. Good talk. I appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you, boys.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Yeah.